Well, greetings and welcome to The Dividing Line. My name's James White. I don't have any monitor here to know what in the world's going on, but that's okay. That's how life is, and when you forget to look at things. I've got to play this. This just happened, and evidently there is some... They're actually using the term big boy. I mean, that's scary. That's a big boy press conference coming up with President Biden. But he just, evidently Zelensky's in town. I've seen some pictures. Zelensky's always in his fatigues, except when he's not. according to a French newspaper, I saw his wife had just purchased a $43 million luxury automobile. So I just, who knows where that came from, the money came from. Biggest scam ever. And let me just say something. I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I had pushback. Look, what is going on right now is extremely dangerous in the world. I read a book a number of years ago on how close we came to thermonuclear war during the Cuban Missile Crisis, which took place right around the time I was born, actually. And it was all over our insistence that a sovereign country, Cuba, was not allowed to have Russian missiles in it because that was too close to our borders. They could launch those missiles and they could hit targets before we'd even have an opportunity to hardly even be prepared to respond. And we said, you're not doing that. And we came to within that close of thermonuclear war with Russia in the early 1960s, insisting that to have a stable world meant that there had to be borders. Not only borders as in a... Everybody back then knew there had to be borders. We don't know that anymore, but back then we knew that. That was before George Soros decided to destroy the world. Man, he's going to answer for a lot. Oh, my goodness. The blood on that man's hands is incredible. That there needed to be stability. And that having nuclear missiles in Cuba destroyed that stability. Now, 60 years later, the United States is insisting that Ukraine become part of NATO. Now, that was unthinkable 20 years ago. It was unthinkable 20 years ago. Everybody knew that that was the exact same destabilizing move that Russia had tried in the 1960s. But now, everybody's on board. Republicans, Democrats, everybody. And it's like, this is how you start a nuclear war. What is wrong with these people? And with that in mind... I made comment about that. And, people are coming back. It's all Russian aggression. Everything's Russia. Everything's Russia. You know, the Steele dossier was Russia. And the Hunter Biden laptop was Russia. And everything's Russia. You know, it's just like, okay, whatever you say. And so this just came across my feed. Like I said, Zelensky's in town trying to get some more billions of dollars for whatever it is he does with it. And the candidate for president from the party of the culture of death, also known as the Democratic Party, is introducing him. This just happened. This is even before the news conference, the big boy news conference. It's 10 seconds. Here we go.
And now I want to hand it over to the president of Ukraine, who has as much courage as he has determination. Ladies and gentlemen, President Putin.
Who was it? Whoopi Goldberg? I think it was Whoopi Goldberg on The View. Said that she doesn't care if President Biden poops his pants. She's still going to vote for him. Or if he's in a coma. Okay. All right. All right. There you go. Yeah. What is there left to say? I don't recognize this society. I don't recognize this nation. In my youth and early adulthood, certainly there was great division between Republicans and Democrats, but we live in an utterly divided nation. Utterly divided nation. What one side calls good, the other side calls evil. And no nation can survive that for very long. Really can't. Of course, the other side doesn't have any basis for calling anything evil, but that's another issue. We move on from that point in time. So, where was I going here? There's been some really interesting. Yeah, I think it was yesterday, or maybe the day before yesterday. Senator Mike Lee from Utah responded to Mike Winger. Way to go, Mike. And Mike had posted, Mormonism is not Christianity. As much as I love Mormons, it would be an insult to Christ to pretend they are the same. I would have phrased that last part a little bit more clearly, honestly. I think what he's saying, it would be an insult to Christ to pretend that they, Mormonism and Christianity, are the same belief system. And of course, when I first started studying Mormonism, all the Mormons agreed with that. And they said the same thing. But Mormonism has changed a lot. And so Mike Lee responded to Mike Winger and said, so if one believes that Jesus Christ, the only begotten the Father, lived a sinless life and atoned for the sins of mankind, he's not a Christian if he belongs to a denomination of which you don't approve, asking for a friend. Now, again, this is a good illustration of how much Mormonism has changed just over the past 30 years, because every missionary I met with in those first years, and that was a lot of missionaries, We hit the ground running. I mean, for years, I was a part of a very large Southern Baptist megachurch. And so any of the outreach visits, for example, that had to do with Mormonism or Jehovah's Witnesses, they were given to me. And that would be a lot of them. I was going out talking to a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses, a lot of Mormons as a result of that. And then what would happen is people would contact me and they'd be like, missionaries are coming over at such and such time, to the point where the Arizona State Mission got my picture and distributed it amongst the missionaries. So I remember very clearly being at an apartment one day waiting for missionaries to come. And I didn't even think about it at the time. I hadn't gotten used to this idea yet, but I was looking out the windows, the second floor apartment, and I see the missionaries riding by on their bikes, and they look up, and they keep riding. And a few minutes later, the guy gets a phone call from the missionaries, and they said, we can't come to see you, not while that guy is there. We're not going to meet with him. We know who he is. And that was after that one particularly really interesting encounter we had with some missionaries that wouldn't leave this woman alone. She didn't want them coming anymore, but they wouldn't leave her alone. And so one night, about six of us, maybe eight of us from North Phoenix, showed up when they were supposed to show up. You were there. And then we had some big boys there. Who was that? We had a really big guy with us, remember? No. This was. We're not talking necessarily just tall. He was like weightlifter big. Might have been Russ Bleyl. Might be. Yeah. There was a lot of testosterone there. So yeah, the missionaries. Yeah, and of course that's also around the same time that we started going to LDS wards and giving our testimonies during. That was before? Okay. All right. But they knew who we were by this point in time. So anyway, I don't know how I got onto that. What?
I was just thinking about, there was the one story you told about this missionary that had come and sat down, and you introduced yourself, and the kid looks at you and says, "Wow, I thought you were just like a myth. You're real."
Well, and wasn't it at your apartment that we had the two missionaries show up, and the one guy was just gung-ho, yes. And he wanted to, we were going back and forth, and the other missionary was on the other end of the couch.
My couch, asleep.
And he fell asleep. Yep, I remember that one. You could just tell he had zero interest whatsoever. Or maybe he was going through a growth spurt. I look at him now, and they're just so young. They're kids. They're babies. To say that I've spent time talking with LDS missionaries. The point is, I know how Mormons talked in the 1980s, and how they talk in 2024. It's been 40 years. And it's changed, and it's changed radically. And look, if you're a Mormon and you're watching this program, maybe you're not old enough to know this. But believe you me, I know Mormons that are my age, and they will confirm, oh yeah, things have changed a lot.
Yes, as they used to say on Sesame Street, one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah. And so I responded to Mike Lee's tweet. And a lot of people thought it was just, they called it epic and all the rest of this kind of stuff. I just, because the way he phrased it, remember what he wrote was, so if one believes that Jesus Christ, the only begotten of the Father, lived a sinless life, and if you know Mormon theology, you know that Jesus is not the only begotten Son of God. The only way he is the only begotten Son of God is in one particular fashion, in the flesh. And that's in their writings. The only begotten the Father in the flesh. Because all of us have been begotten by the Father in the Spirit. We're all the Spirit children of Elohim and one of his many wives. But only God the Father in the body of flesh and bones had sexual intercourse with Mary to create the body of Jesus. Now, look, just by the way, I'm not sure what the percentage would be, but I would be willing to guess you tell 96% of modern Mormons who are under the age of 35, what I just said, and they will be shocked. They'll go, "What? No, what? No, wait, what idiot are you listening to?" type stuff. They really will. There's an entire chapter, if I can find it, there it is, in Is the Mormon My Brother? Entire chapter on this subject, A Mormon Doctrine. Yeah, it starts on page chapter 12, page 185. If you're interested, and I thought I had included. Huh, that's interesting. I thought I had included the image that I had taken from one of the official church publications that had the little stick figures, you know, God the Father, Mary, Jesus, you know, mommy, daddy, you, whole nine yards, but I don't see it in there. I addressed this rather fully in the book. There isn't a question about this. There is no question that this is what was taught. And I've told the story before. I was at the west gate of the Mormon temple in Salt Lake City, morning of General Conference. So it's sort of shady over there on that side. The sun hasn't gotten there yet. And we're passing out tracts, and this tall, lanky Mormon fellow looked a little bit, just a little bit older than me, is coming across the road, and he's in a hurry. You can tell. And, you know, I was trained by Wally Tope to get tracts out, so I got close enough to him, and I handed the tract to him, and he took it, and you could just see that there was this battle going on in his mind. Do I even bother? And he stops, and you sort of see his shoulders go down, and he turns around, and he looks at me, and my other volunteers are, this is fairly early on. This is probably third, fourth, maybe fifth time we had done it as a group. So this would have been 87-ish, 88-ish, somewhere around there. And he looks at me and he says, you know what's wrong with you? Okay, that's not the first time we've heard that one. I was not sure what was going to come after that. He says, you think sex is dirty. There, very rarely am I left just staring at somebody because I have no words. But I was just going, what? And he says, you don't believe that God the Father could have sex with the Virgin Mary to create the body of Jesus, and that's why you're wrong, and this church is true. And he turned around, walked right in. And all the volunteers are just looking at me with their eyes are like saucers, you know? And I'm just like, well, folks, you just met a really honest Mormon. There you go. That's what they believe.
I will never forget when we're out in Mesa years and years ago, and this young woman is, I think she was talking to you. She might have been talking to Mike. She wasn't talking to me, but I'm just kind of listening, right? And you're going through this, explaining this to her, and she is, no, we do not believe that. I've never heard anybody teach that. I've never ever heard that. Complete 100% denial. It can't be. And you looked over at a couple of missionaries that were, you know, usually out there to spy on us. They always had spies
and steel tracks.
Yeah. And you said, go over there and ask them and then come back. Usually that's a scenario where they just leave and they don't ever, you never see them again. She went over and she talks to the missionaries for a few minutes and then she comes back. 180 degree reversal. Okay, so we do believe that. And then she begins defending it, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So all of this to explain my response to Senator Mike Lee, I typed, you mean the only begotten the Father in the flesh, don't you? And I put in the flesh in bold italics. Because in Mormonism, Elohim, the Father, is an exalted man from another planet who had a God before him, who only organized this planet. He didn't create this planet. He organized this planet. God can only organize pre-existing matter. And he engaged in physical sexual relations with his spirit daughter, Mary, to beget the body of Jesus, who has become yet another God. And in fact, I just point out, that's why Jesus had the power of eternal life, is because his father was an exalted being. That's what they teach. What they taught. I should keep saying what they taught in their official documents, by apostles, sitting around in the celestial room in the temple discussing these things. But today, I would say less than 5% of Mormons that once you get into the older Mormons, guys who went through the temple, you know, 30, 40 years ago, then they know it. Which means they also know they're no longer hearing it. It's not no longer being taught. So they see the change. He atoned for Adam's sin, leaving us to work out our salvation, including exaltation to godhood, through the eternal law of regression, the power of the priesthood, etc. These are all foundational beliefs never even heard of in Christianity. Mormons of just a few decades ago said that openly, and I gave a reference. LeGrand Richards, A Marvelous Work and a Wonder. Anyone who's read it, I don't have it in here right now. I know right where it is in the next room. But if you read A Marvelous Work and a Wonder by LeGrand Richards, who was one of the 12 apostles of the Mormon Church at the time, almost every chapter, and this is one of the first books I read, one of the first LDS books that I read, was A Marvelous Work and a Wonder, because there was a set of like four or five books that every missionary was given once he was called on his mission. And Articles of Faith by James Talmage was one of them. Doctrine of Salvation, the three-volume set by Joseph Fielding Smith, and A Marvelous Work and a Wonder. And NGS the Christ, also by Talmage. And almost every chapter in that book specifically said, Joseph Smith did not get this from reading the Bible. Joseph Smith received this by revelation. That's why it cannot be found in the Bible. That's why you can't try to prove these things from the Bible. It's revelation over and over again. And the Mormons were very clear about this back then, before Gordon Hinckley started the let's try to act like we're all just a bunch of Christians stuff. So Mormons, a few decades ago, said that openly. See LeGrand Richards, A Marvelous Work and a Wonder. Mormonism is the most polytheistic religion ever to appear amongst the sons of men. And what I mean by that is it's not just that Mormonism believes in some extra gods. They believe in an infinite number of gods. So the Hindus have 330 million amateurs. In comparison to Mormonism, unlimited number of gods, infinite number of gods. And the number is growing, if you believe what they teach. And so that's what I wrote and posted that. Someone, Christopher T., actually gave a nice link to where you can get Is the Mormon My Brother? Since that is the book that I wrote. Obviously, I address the doctrine of God rather fully in Letters to a Mormon Elder as well. But Is the Mormon My Brother was specifically focused on the doctrine of God. And so it goes rather in depth, a little bit more in depth than I think most people want. And now, wow, in comparison to the actual knowledge of most Mormons, that book might confuse a few. They might be heading over to their local ward chapel to find the little library to look some of that stuff up because they've never even heard of it before. But yeah. I'm sorry? Yeah. If they have those books, yeah. So it was now obviously to my knowledge, Sandra Lee has not responded to me, but That's what you get. Also going on Twitter right now I'm seeing more and more and more interaction with Roman Catholicism. And of course, I see just this really wide variety of Roman Catholics on Twitter, and they don't seem to feel that that's a problem, even though their emphases, their sources of authority seem very, very different to me. You have the people who are just sold out on the Marian dogmas, and this is absolutely central. And then you've got the more philosophically minded little less Marianly devoted type folks. And then you got the folks who don't really know what they believe, but everybody has those types of folks on Twitter. And so sometimes people... Someone just posted a picture. Zelensky's face when Biden introduced him as President Putin. Every single world leader knows Joe Biden is senile. The whole world is looking at our nation in absolute astonishment. We will never have the trust or the fear of the rest of the world again. We never will. And nor should we, to be honest with you. And that's going to have a huge impact upon our economy, our ability to obtain resources, and hence our liberties, our freedoms. It's all purposeful. It's all intentional. Or if what I'm seeing, if what we're hearing right now, that, you know, Biden's digging his, and when I say this Biden, I mean Jill Biden, is digging her heels in, and he's going, I ain't going nowhere, and I've won all these delegates, and I'm the candidate, and that's just the way it is. You're just left going, are these people turning on each other? And if so, what's going to be the result of all of this? It's fascinating, and I'm glad God's still in control, because I don't think anybody else is. It's just boom. Truly, truly amazing. And it's frightening for my kids, my grandkids, my great grandkids. And everything else. Anyways, back to the Roman Catholic issue. Francis hasn't said anything wildly heretical or crazy in the past couple of weeks now. So the professional Pope splainers are breathing a sigh of relief. They're just waiting. They know that this isn't going to last forever. And I mentioned, I forget what the context was. I think it was here on the program. It may have even been the last time. That Francis had named Father Maurizio Chiodi to a 7-member committee, a study group on the Synod on Synodality. That talk about a lame name. The Synod on Synodality. Maybe in Latin it ends up working. I don't know, but it doesn't work in English. But it is this, I don't even know how to describe it. It's meant to be this wonderfully inclusive, non-authoritarian. Everyone gets together and sings Kumbaya. You know, we want to have study groups and flowers and, you know, the rest of this stuff. It's the exact opposite of the Council of Trent, okay? Or especially Florence and how they dealt with the Greeks. And so it met last year, remember? And we reported then on all these speakers lecturing the bishops on the need to be inclusive. And the conservative bishops, i.e. the actual Roman Catholic bishops, are coming out going, we literally have people lecturing bishops who do not hold meaningful positions in the church as if we're children. And it's all meant to tell us that we need to be accepting of the practice of homosexuality. This is what the bishops are saying. This is what they're coming out and telling people. This is what's happening. This couldn't be happening without Francis's approval, direction, and everything else. And so this is what's going on. And so this Maurizio Chiodi has argued that we need to consider the possibility that homosexual acts can sometimes be morally good. And he has been placed as one of only seven members of the Synod on Synodality's study group on, quote, controversial doctrinal, pastoral, and ethical issues, end quote. What I said may have been the last Dividing Line, it may have been last week, whenever this came out. This is July 9th, so yeah, it was probably on the last Dividing Line. But I was brief about it. I said, look, this is exactly how it happened to the United Church of Christ, the United Methodist, the PCUSA, the ELCA, you name it, all the now corpse mainline denominations that are deader than doornail, apostate, they've got lesbian priestesses in rainbow stoles telling absurd stories as if these are sermons. How'd all that happen? Well, it didn't just happen overnight. It started with study groups and putting the one person on there, gets a few things in, and they put out their report, and it starts moving this direction, and then the next report builds on that report and moves a little bit farther and moves a little bit farther. It's the same game plan. And the reality is, in Roman Catholicism, it's Tucho Fernandez and Francis and their cohort and all the cardinals that they've put in place to select Francis's successor that are engineering all this stuff. And believing Roman Catholics say, nope, 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 can't happen, nope, 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 can't happen because of what Vatican I said. As if that somehow has some type of meaning. 1,870 years after the birth of Christ, a council meets and says the Pope can't lead the church astray. Well, the Pope already had. This council has zero authority. The apostles are like, what? This is being done in our name? Are you serious? But the believing Roman Catholics is what they have to believe, that you know, it can't happen. Can't happen. And it's happening right in front of them. And because of that dogma, that empty, meaningless dogma of papal infallibility, they're just, nope, it's not happening. Nope. The Pope's not putting a bunch of liberals on all the various, no, papal biblical commission. Nope, nobody there believes that Matthew wrote Matthew. I don't see that. Nope. That's how this kind of foolish, ahistorical, anti-biblical dogma functions. And so this is what's going on. He is changing the teaching of the church. When you control who you're putting into places of teaching authority interpretation for the next generations, that's how you change the teaching of the church. That's how you make the change. Remember that poor, I just felt so sorry for him. There was a bishop in the United Methodist Church from Africa. Have you noticed how Africa has become the last bastion of common sense on the planet? Really has. I mean, remember Matt Walsh's what is a woman thing? He goes to Africa and he's asking some Africans via translator, what is a woman? And they're just like, because I think they're probably women walking around topless in their village. Sort of like, well, and then they ask about marriage and transgenderism. And these African tribesmen are just looking at Matt Walsh like he just stepped out of a flying saucer. What are you talking about? This is insanity. Yeah, it is. Utter insanity. So here's this poor United Methodist bishop from Africa. And, you know, one of the last holdouts. And remember, he's the guy that was standing there going, but the Bible is the word of God. And not realizing that that denomination had left him behind decades ago. He had just kept doing his thing. I remember my dad telling me that back in the 50s, 40s and 50s, he had heard Methodist preachers that could preach the gospel with power. They're gone. That denomination is, and how did it happen? Same way it's happening right now in Roman Catholicism. The doctrine is changed by changing the context in which it is presented. And the next generation, who's become used to this weakened formulation, then can accept an even further altered formulation and go, well, it's just, you know, the church has the right to interpret these things. Church has the right to interpret these things. Even if what that means is I end up believing something that is 170 degrees off of what was taught only 100 years earlier. That's where Rome is. And they can't stop it because they don't have an objective standard. But they have the scriptures. But they've already subjected the scriptures to the authority of the magisterium. And hence there is, you know, it's sola ecclesia. Sola ecclesia. It's right there. I got to put some, Bible butter on my Greek New Testament before. It's getting a little dry there. It's sola ecclesia. That there is no objective, unchanging standard. There is no apostolic tradition. There is no body of tradition, nameless, faceless, unrecorded, just passed down by whispering in the ear from one bishop to another. Every wild-eyed doctrine that has been placed at the feet of the apostles that they never dreamed of, never taught, it's all apostolic tradition. Okay, we understand how that's how it works. Apostolic tradition is anything you can't prove from what the apostles actually get. Here's apostolic tradition. Here it is. Okay? This is all we've got. And you can say, well, you know, maybe, you know, I saw one guy saying, well, you know, I think there's, you know, some apostolic tradition that's not in scripture. It's just not definitional of the faith. You know, once you open up that door, there's no closing it. You're done. And so this is the situation you all are facing. And that's what truly amazes me when I look at people that are still converting to Roman Catholicism today. Because they will, you know, someone sent me a video of this convert, and he's talking about how the early church venerated martyrs and their bones and stuff like that. And certainly, during the period of persecution, you can find some evidence, not everywhere, not universal, but you can find a growing cult of the saints out of which the cult of Mary begins to grow. And, you know, I just sit back and think about it for a second. Someone sent me a link to a statement in chapter 66 of Justin's apology, saying, what about this? And it used the term transmutation, not transubstantiation, and certainly Justin didn't have the Aristotelian categories to even make that make sense. But what do you do with Justin's statement here? And if you look it up in Schaff, you'll notice there's a footnote and talking about how Roman Catholics and Protestants and Eastern Orthodox, they all claim it for themselves because it's so vague, they all can claim it for themselves. But anyway, we're talking about a time period. When things are presented to you on Twitter, Facebook, whatever the context is, from church history, this is why it's vitally important to have some kind of knowledge, some broad timeline to be able to put these claims into some type of a context. So, Justin Martyr, you know when he lived? Do you know anything about him? Do you know why he wore the philosopher's pallium his entire life? Do you know anything about what he had access to as far as the canon of scripture? Because remember, there is a clear and obvious parallel between the time period during which the people of God recognized the Tanakh, the Torah, the Nevi'im, the Ketuvim, the Jewish canon of scripture. 200 years before Christ, they lay up only the 24 books or 22 books, depending on how you count them, that is the same as the Protestant canon of the Old Testament. They lay them up in the temple. And we see multiple references from Jewish sources concerning what is and what is not. So in other words, there was already law, Moses, prophets, writings, while some of the apocryphal books are still being written. In fact, at least one of the apocryphal books even makes reference to that. It's so anachronistic to think that these books are actually part of the Old Testament. But, and maybe someday I'm just going to have to, because it has been 30 years probably since I did this, someday I'm just going to have to resurrect my Apocrypha presentation and just do it on the dividing line. It's probably not a bad idea. If I've got all these... Well, it doesn't matter. I've got it in PowerPoint/Keynote, so I can just throw it right up on the screen. It's easy to do. But yeah, I could do it that way, but it'd be easier. It would probably actually be easier to do it here just because you wouldn't have to be switching back and forth between what's on the screen and what's being projected. But anyways, on the apocryphal books and the evidence on the subject and things like that. But the point is, do you know how deeply would your theology be impacted if you did not have all 27 books in the New Testament? Well, what if you didn't have 3 John? Yeah, it probably wouldn't have much of an impact. Are there important things in 3 John? Yeah, but I can't think of anything that isn't mentioned someplace else. There is a reference, and I don't remember if it was specifically in 3 John. I don't have my reading glasses on, so that's not going to do me a good... Oh, they're over there. I could put them on. Where he talks about the truth will always be with us. So that would be, an important thing. But obviously, the doctrine of the atonement is not going to be fundamentally impacted by not having 3 John. But it will be if you don't have Hebrews. And you can tell... Scholars can tell who read Justin and look at all the references he uses that he doesn't have a complete canon. And so if you allow the early church fathers to be the early church fathers, then you can just allow for that and go, yeah, Justin's probably going to say some few things, come to some conclusions I'm not going to agree with, and there's an obvious reason why, and no problem. You can't do that with Rome. They have to look at these people and they have to find in them their own beliefs. It is Roman Catholic anachronism and it's dogmatic anachronism. Anachronism, obviously, everybody knows, is the idea of reading into earlier sources, concepts, context, beliefs that did not exist at that time. And so one of the real clear examples of this is, so for example, the First Vatican Council in 1870, when speaking of the papacy, said, "We therefore, for the preservation, safekeeping, and increase the Catholic flock, with the approval of the Sacred Council, do judge it to be necessary to propose the belief and acceptance of all the faithful in accordance with the ancient and constant faith of the universal church. The doctrine touching the institution, perpetuity, and nature of the sacred apostolic primacy." So, in accordance with the ancient and constant faith of the universal church. Who gets to define that? Well, they do. And so you're being told, this is the ancient and constant faith, the universal church. And so when you read any of the apostolic fathers, it is a fact that there is no concept of the papacy in existence at that time. Newman knew that. That's why he had to come up with what's called the development hypothesis. Honest Roman Catholic historians admit it today. But that's why there's such a huge chasm between honest Roman Catholic historians and most Roman Catholic apologists. And so the Roman Catholic who believes these things reads the early church fathers and inserts, specifically the apostolic fathers, and inserts into his or her reading of their words concepts and contexts that simply would have left Ignatius or Clement or whoever it was who wrote the Epistle to Diognetus utterly confused as to what in the world was being, why would you think that's what we were saying? Never even thought of that before. So, likewise, the council continued on, talked about having just quoted a number of texts, including Petrine texts, which, by the way, when you actually look at early church writings, were interpreted a number of different ways. Yet the council says, at open variance with this clear doctrine of Holy Scripture, as it has been ever understood by the Catholic Church, are the perverse opinions of those who, so on and so forth. It's just a simple, bold-faced lie to say that there is one understanding. Now, and this is how people get around it. They'll go, okay. Yeah. You can find this early church father had a different view. That early church father didn't have a different view. They had a different view. But that's not apostolic tradition. Now, I first ran into this with Jerry Matatix. Or Jerry Matatix first ran into it with me. Might be the better way to put it. But I had listened to all the debates that Jerry had done with Calvary Chapel pastors and stuff like that. And so when I started hitting him with church history stuff, because I started teaching church history in 1990, so when I started punching back, that's when you hit, well, but that's not a part of, that's not tradition. So he could quote, and it might be the same guy, he could quote Tertullian in support of his position. If I quote Tertullian in contradiction of his position, well, one's tradition, one's not. How convenient! Very, very convenient indeed. So you have this kind of assertion being made. And let me, there's another quote. I know it's in here someplace. I just grabbed this right before the program started, so I didn't get a chance to roll down to it. Well, I know what the name is, but I wonder if I could just throw it in, search for it. Nope. Where is the search thing? There we go. Hold on. This is a live program. There it is. I like search things. It's much faster than indexes. I tell you. From back in 1896, we have these words from a papal document called Satis Cognitum. Wherefore, in the decree of the Vatican Council as to the nature and authority of the primacy of the Roman Pontiff, no newly conceived opinion is set forth, but the venerable and constant belief of every age. Let me repeat that. The venerable and constant belief of every age. When you encounter papal statements that are simply historically laughable. I've read the words of the North African bishops under Cyprian telling Stephen, the Bishop of Rome, to stick it in his ear. It was said in Latin, a little bit nicer than that, but that's what they were saying. In fact, I've read where the deacons of the Church of Rome wrote to Cyprian and called him Pope. And I believe it was Fortunatus who wrote a scathing letter about Stephen, the Bishop of Rome, and his absurd attempts to elevate himself beyond anything that the apostles had ever taught or believed, or the church had ever believed, so on and so forth. And then you start looking at the pseudo-Isidorian decretals, and then you look at the story. Right before the program started, I was reading a secular book on ancient forgeries, and specifically on the subject of the forgery of the Donation of Constantine. And how the modern, and I say modern, from minimally Trent, maybe even Fourth Lateran Council onward, doctrine of the papacy could never have come into existence without the Donation of Constantine. And yet, the entire body of the Roman Catholic scholarly community recognizes today that the Donation of Constantine is a complete forgery. But it functioned definitionally for hundreds of years as a fraud within Roman Catholicism in building the power of the papacy. The number of patristic quotations that Rome has created out of whole cloth to use to substantiate her authority and her dogmas and her teachings is astonishing. It's massive. I've told you the story about how in a debate in my lifetime, I debated a Roman Catholic on Long Island on the perpetual virginity of Mary. I think it might have been Immaculate Conception, but it was one of the Marian dogmas. He hit me with a quotation from Augustine that I had never heard of before. It's because it was fake. Now, did he know it was fake? I don't know. But there are so many of these kinds of frauds out there that it's amazing. And so what you're really dealing with today is this massive edifice of the papacy. And it just floats in midair. What it had been founded on, what it had been developed from, has been washed away by the study of history. The Donation of Constantine, the false citations. You look at how many things that, for example, Thomas Aquinas would quote. And again, this is pre-critical. And what does that mean? this was in a time period where you still, during the medieval period, had the attitude of anachronism. What does that mean? Nothing's ever changed. So that's why you have the artist paintings of David. You know, they'll have a biblical, you know, an artist do a biblical picture, and David wears armor and is riding a horse and lives in a castle because they thought everything had always been the same. They didn't realize that things had changed. And it was Lorenzo Valla who realized, I think things have changed, and began proving it. And that's why he only publishes stuff anonymously and posthumously, because he would be burned at the stake. And it was Erasmus who then published his stuff and risked getting burned at the stake. And he almost did get burned at the stake a few times. But anyway, so Aquinas, brilliant mind, but living in a day where, hey, if people have said that this quote's been accurate all along, then it must be accurate all along. And so he's quoting stuff that just no one back then had actually said. And that's how you create these dogmas, and you maintain them over time, even when historical research discovers nothing that we've believed here is actually true. We can't substantiate any of this stuff. But it's still there, and people will defend it to their dying breath. But it's simply not true. And so on Twitter, someone had put up a picture of this corpse, skeleton, a relic that people bow down to and pray to and do all the rest of this stuff. And so the Roman Catholics start going, well, when the early martyrs, you know, they felt that their bodies were more precious than gold. And that's true. They did say that. That doesn't mean that they propped their bodies up in churches, which they didn't have any of at the time because they couldn't, and prayed to them in the sense of thinking that they were sources of grace. And certainly had nothing to do with indulgences and all the rest of that stuff that ends up becoming the whole relic trade during the medieval period. This is why you need to know church history, because they'll take something and it's one part that develops way back here, but it doesn't come to have the meaning it has today until this part, and this part develop, and they all come together 1,000 years later. But I found the one part way back here. That must mean it's all true. I've been watching it on Twitter all day today. And it is tough on Twitter to try to give them a background and to try to encourage them to maybe, you know, recognize what they're doing. But I'm more concerned about the people that are seeing it for the first time and going, I never heard anything about Polycarp before or something like that. And that's how you end up with these people going, I was a Protestant until I read the early church. You didn't read the early church fathers. You read an anachronistic reinterpretation of them in light of modern Roman Catholic dogma. That's what you did. Be honest. You actually read very little of them yourself. And that's just sort of how it works. But it just really leaves me confused about these people converting in the days of Francis, when it's so obvious that the guy doesn't really necessarily care about all that stuff. Liberation theologians, that's not their thing. They're Marxists. And he is changing tradition and the trajectory of the church right, left, and center. And you just watch. You know, I can say just watch, but it takes time. And not all of us necessarily have all of that time to be looking at stuff. So, anyways. Just some stuff from Twitter today. Just a reminder, the part of the reason I haven't pushed to get the stuff up quite yet on the debates is, for the first one, there has to be formal approval by Roman Catholic bishops in the area. And that hasn't actually been obtained yet. They're assuming that it's going to be given, but it might not. So we don't want to necessarily, you know, spend the time doing graphics and stuff until we know it's going to happen. The second debate on open theism, that one's pretty much locked in. And then the debate with Jared, that's pretty much locked in too. But we will be putting that stuff together for our friends up in Colorado. Looking forward to seeing you all up there. And thanks again to everybody for your participation in the Bible and Multilayer Cross fundraiser we did to help with the cost on the new RV. The third item, and it's not like we're going around, it's just this is what people have done for us in the past. We know a few people that are good artisans and do wonderful work. And so Derek Melton has already sent the handmade, hand-forged, beautiful blade. We have pictures of it. When Rich first saw it, I heard it from the other room. He goes, "Oh, I want that." So there you go. I suppose that means from your perspective, it's one good-looking blade.
You have to do it in the voice of the emperor. "I want this."
Yeah, that's what you said. I want this, yes. So it has been shipped, and so I would assume while I'm on the road, we will start up a raffle on that one. And
That is unless it accidentally disappears somewhere. Who knows? Who knows? I'm getting older, and the memory goes, and who knows where I put it.
Wait a minute. That actually happened. Which one? What was it you lost?
That was the Bible last year that we auctioned off.
Yeah, you actually lost that.
I put it in a safe place. That was
everybody
my first mistake.
Everybody knows the danger of the safe place. I put it in a safe place. I just don't have any idea where it is. Yeah, but we did find it, thankfully. But yes, I have a picture of the blades, so Rich would have to hide it the rest of his life and never get to have it around if it did get purposefully misplaced. So anyways, that'll be coming up as well. So once again, this is the last program in studio, Lord willing, for a month. And we will be back in the Mobile Command Center and made a lot of changes. Hopefully that will greatly enhance our internet accessibility, but it also will mean that we're trying to work with a new system the first few times, and there may be some hiccups, and we'll see. Pull out on Monday and head north. So I'm excited about that, and just hey, if you've got the Alpha and Omega Ministries app, you'll always know when we're going to be doing what we're doing. Download that. We'll see you, Lord willing, from the road next week. God bless.